Hey, yo, the Deej.
Yeah?
Did you finish your homework?
Yes.
Did you do your chores?
Yes.
Even the dog poo?
Yes.
Do you want to watch a movie?
Sure. What are we watching?
Everybody.
Yes. Welcome to Movies My Dad Made Me Watch.
That's right. Welcome to Movies My Dad Made Me Watch, which is basically a podcast about me making my son watch movies that I grew up with.
Yes. And movies that I also grew up with, but that'll come in later.
That's true. So, hello. Welcome, everyone, to our first edition and our very first podcast. As you can tell from the intro to our show, we are actually doing a movie called
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park. I am the dad.
And I am the Deej. The Deejinator. About to be
Deejinator. The Deejinator. That's right, the Deej. And we're just a couple of guys stuck in my son's closet. We're going to talk about some movies today. And in particular, we're going to talk about the 1993 blockbuster
Jurassic Park.
I love this movie. One of my favorite movies all time. Deej, it's your favorite movie, isn't it?
Yeah, no matter what.
Top one in your top five?
Top one.
And that actually leads us to what we are going to be talking about probably over the next 5 weeks is DJ's top five favorite movies of all time in a loving category we like to call movies that have shaped my son.
In all my glory.
In all your glory. At 11 years old. And this is our first movie. We love this movie. We recently rewatched it again, probably for what, the 100th? 115th time?
I think it was 101.
No, it's 101. And we love this movie. Can't get enough of it. Some fantastic actors, some fantastic dinosaurs, lots of yelling and roaring. It was a really, really good time. So, a little bit about us, which there's really not much to tell you. Truth be told, I am not any kind of a film expert or anything like that at all.
No, we're just normal people who like movies.
Just normal people that like movies, and we love talking about movies, especially DJ and I. Sometimes we go on huge tangents and kind of nerd out, especially when it comes to Jurassic Park, which, interestingly enough, I probably showed DJ Jurassic Park when he was 6 years old. Was it five? Five was the first time that I showed the Deej this movie. And we probably spent a good portion of this movie covering his eyes up. Because there was definitely some frightening stuff for sure.
I mean, like, in the beginning, it's definitely a sci-fi movie. But once you get to later points, it's a horror movie.
Oh, it completely turns into a horror movie. You're absolutely right.
Horror survival.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, 1993, this movie came out. It was directed by Steven Spielberg. It was considered a huge science fiction movie, like a giant monster movie. And I actually found out, Deej, a couple of days ago when I was doing a little bit of research, that Steven Spielberg was kind of looking for a on-land kind of sequel to Jaws.
Oh, God, that movie's horrifying, too.
It's really interesting, though, that they were kind of taking that point to it. But also, I don't know if I told you this, but he actually got inspiration for doing this film from the 1954 King of the Monsters Godzilla film that was made by Toho Films, I think. Is that right?
The original? Yes, that's yeah. Toho.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool, especially bringing in Godzilla, which, ladies and gentlemen, may be coming into play a little bit later on in the podcast history, we hope. But this, actually, going back to Jurassic Park, became a movie in 1993. It was directed by Steven Spielberg. The screenplay was written by David Cup, I think is how you say it.
David Cope. One of those.
Forgive us. And then it was also actually originally written by Michael Crichton, the novel and the original screenplay as well. Michael Crichton wrote the novel and it was released in 1990. But even before the movie, excuse me, the book was released, Steven Spielberg bought the rights to the book for like $1.6 million, I think.
Yeah.
And then they ended up paying Michael Crichton an additional, was it $500,000 to write the additional screenplay or the original screenplay?
Yeah, I think it was like $2.1 million altogether.
That's a lot of money to get paid. I mean, well, it absolutely paid off. It's, you know, one of the best movies ever. Well, I think so anyway. It was starred by Sam Neill, the beautiful Laura Dern. Oh, my goodness gracious. And then, of course,
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum, DJ's hero. DJ loves Jeff Goldblum. And, of course, they had the impeccable Richard Attenborough, who was the creator of Jurassic Park.
Yeah, he played John Hammond. Rest in peace, Robert Attenborough.
Yeah. We lost him a little while ago. 2014, I think he passed away. But this movie, I think, is almost perfection. Even like some of the cheesy parts, which we're actually going to get into a little bit later, we're going to have a segment called lovingly called Cheese, because DJ likes to call out a lot of cheesiness in the movies, which is it's kind of funny, and it will kind of lead to a lot of goofy parts in our podcast where I will find stuff absolutely amazing and DJ will definitely call cheese on it, because it's just like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, it's so bad. And of course, I'm coming from it from a very like nostalgic kind of realm, and you know, I'm kind of reliving how my life was when I first saw the movie and how I just thought that no matter what, that it's going to be perfect. But of course, DJ is always going to bring me down to earth, that's for sure.
I mean, compared to the modern age stuff, some of the things in this movie are questionable.
Well, oh, that hurts my feelings when you say that, but you're not wrong. Unfortunately, you are not wrong. And it kind of goes to a lot of the CGI that we see on there, and a lot of the ways that they're using the animatronics that I believe they're still using in the movie. I believe, actually, particularly the very first part of the movie. Well, I mean, I guess we should just get right into it, right? So in the very first part of the movie, that whole kind of scene when they're bringing in the alpha of the velociraptors, that whole thing is animatronics, right?
Yeah, the dinosaur, like that whole bit is straight up animatronics and acting.
That's incredible. Did they have someone in the cage kind of working with the dinosaur in there?
I think it was remote controlled.
That's super cool. But talk about like, we're going to get into this movie and like you're instantly frightened already, right?
Yeah.
You have this poor guy screaming to the high heavens, holding on to the side of the thing. Like, guys, can somebody shock the dinosaur? Like, he's got a hold of this guy.
Like, do they have as bad a name as stormtroopers?
Honestly, right? Like, you're going to sit there and just pew pew away. Like, guys, you got to hit him in the side or something. And of course, there's no helping. The poor guy is just toast. He's absolutely toast.
He was consumed by the velociraptor back then.
Exactly right. What's interesting, though, too, is I think I told you this story already. When I first saw this movie, I can't remember if I saw it in the theater, which is, it's interesting because it's kind of one of those movies like you remember when you first saw it. But I can't remember if I saw it in the theater or if I saw it on VHS. But what I do remember is when they did that very first opening scene, I actually remember them messing up a whole editing bit where when they're doing the big crane shot that kind of starts from the top and it works its way down when you see the guys kind of driving in the little deal, you saw boom mics, like a dozen boom mics just hanging out at the top there. And I was just thinking, was the editor drunk? What's going on? How did he miss a whole full screen of boom mics?
Is he depressed?
I don't know what's going on, man, but that was crazy. But obviously now in the DVD and such, things have changed where they don't have that anymore. But I found that interesting watching that movie later on, how they went in there and they cut out the boom mics. It's very funny. So what was your first thoughts when you first saw the movie?
Oh, like this bit?
This bit, yeah.
Well, I mean, I had to cover my eyes for most of it.
Well, yeah, but like later on when you could actually see it, like when Mom and I would like let you watch it.
I was just horrified. I'm like, Someone help this poor man, please.
And also, I was wondering, like, I'm sure the movie changed for you quite a bit when you were actually able to watch the entire film without us having to cover you up, right? Did it change the way you felt about it?
Because, I mean, originally, I mean, I knew stuff was going down, but I didn't know, like, the level of stuff.
Right. Well, like, your sensories, probably, with all the screaming and everything else that was going around, right?
What is going on? Someone help these people.
Oh, man, that's so funny. There was also some really cool shots throughout the film, too, I think. In particular, I remember one of the first shots in the movie that I was absolutely enamored with was, like, the amber scene when they had that guy. They found that piece of amber, and the dude starts running up into the mine, and he goes in, and they find the amber, and he's holding it, and they do that whole kind of, like, zoom deal on it where you see the mosquito inside of it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool shot.
Yeah, and I wonder how they did the close-up scene. Did they, like, do something with the camera lens, or did they just have a whole bunch of cameras stacked up?
Oh, no. It's like your zoom process in the cameras that allow you to get that close. I mean, those camera lenses are so long in some specs, or in some aspects, that, like, you can kind of get, like, really, right? Yeah, you could probably see, like, the booger inside that mosquito's nose or something like that, you know?
The nose that it had.
Oh, man. And then carrying on into the film, like, even going into it, like, you had one of the best monologues already starting off the movie with Sam Neill's character, who plays Dr.
Alan Grant.
Dr. Alan Grant, who was, like, your personal hero for years.
Well, yes, until I grew older and found the glory of Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum, man. He's hilarious. So, Dr. Grant has that wonderful monologue where he's talking to that kid who was like a know-it-all, that was just a smart aleck kid that just deserved just the dressing down that Sam Neill's character gave him. And I remember the part where he brings out the raptor claw and he starts getting like super graphic to this poor kid and basically telling him like, hey, you just sit around. and something bad's gonna happen with a certain little nail that is not a good look, my brother.
It wouldn't end well if that got to you. Let's just say that.
No, I can't imagine that it would. I mean, you're pretty much toast, I think, at that point.
At that point, like, they're putting butter on you already.
Because you're done. And can we talk about the helicopter going into the dig?
And I'm a very big fan of dinosaurs. I know a lot about paleontology. This bit ticks me and Dad off so bad. It's sand. Sand!
Like, and it's going all over the dig, all over the place. What is going on, guys? Why aren't we bringing in a helicopter, number one, into the dig? Because you know that if it lands anywhere near, the whole process and all those months of work of sitting there sweeping up all that stuff away, what happens?
Gone. Bingo. Gone.
And these poor college kids have been sitting there starving because you know they're not eating. You know Dr. Grant ain't paying these poor guys. Nothing. Just eating rinds of freaking oranges and such because that's the only nutrients you're going to get. Now they got to go back and dig all these things. And another thing, who's inside the daggone helicopter, DJ?
John Hammond. Who knows something about dinosaurs.
And you would think he would know something about digs, right? And that maybe you don't fly a helicopter, or does he just have so much money he just don't care?
It's probably he just has so much money. He probably's like a Scrooge McDuck from DuckTales. He just has a pool of money.
One of the greatest lines in the movie that comes up, what, 4 or 5 times in the movie?
Spare no expense.
So, I mean, he's spending loot. So, come on.
Just sit, making it rain.
You know, it was interesting. When we go into the scene when they're sitting in the trailer and they are talking to, Sam Neill's character and Laura Dern's character comes in and they're talking to Richard Attenborough. Excuse me. Thank you. And they're talking to him. I just realized, like, I don't know how many times I've seen this film. Honestly, it must have been about 40, 50 times. I just realized now that he was going there for like a testimonial. Like, I never got that bit where he says that he's there to basically get their opinion on the Jurassic Park experience, basically. That always just flew over my head until, matter of fact, I had to write it down when I was taking notes watching the movie, that, like, they were there for testimonials. That's, I was like, oh my gosh. I always thought that they were just getting invited because Richard Attenborough's character was crazy and he just wanted these guys to come see dinosaurs.
No, he needed them from the blood-sucking lawyer.
The blood-sucking lawyer. Oh my goodness gracious. So we're about 15 minutes into the movie now. And of course, we meet one of the most iconic characters in the film himself. His real name is Wayne Knight, but he plays who in the movie?
So he plays this character called Dennis Nedry.
Dennis Nedry is the IT director of Jurassic Park, basically?
I think he, like, controls all the controls. Like, he can turn them off, turn them on.
Right, exactly. And he's meeting that kind of creepy dude that, like, wants all of the embryos or some embryos for himself to basically create their own dinosaurs and, I guess, to have, like, their little offshoot of Jurassic Park, but, like, their version of. But what I took away from that scene, well, two things I took away from that scene. One was the absolute genius of that Barbasol can.
Yes. It's amazing.
Right? Like, it's just super, super cool. Like, the whole idea of being able to, like, unscrew the bottom and put the embryos in. But not only that, like, you can still use it to shave. And then, of course, DJ's favorite bit in this movie that just cracks me up. Like, tell him, dude.
Okay, so you know how people put whipped cream on pies, right? Delicious. This person, I don't know if someone else was staying with him, but he puts shaving cream, which you use to shave yourself, you don't eat it, on the pie.
Dude, on the pie. And you know, some poor schlub got that piece of pie and was just so stoked. Like, man, this blueberry pie is about to be everything. And then all of a sudden, they get that minty freshness. That menthol taste in their mouth. I'd ruin pies. It would ruin pies forever. Like, I don't think I could ever have another cherry pie after that ever again. Or like, for sure. About 16, 17 minutes into the movie, we're flying into Isla Nublar. Mm. Who do we meet for the first time, my son?
In all his beauty and glory, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum. He's such a punk rocker, man. Like, I love this guy so much. Dr. Ian Malcolm was the character's name.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this. Would it be better if they played a Clash song when you first see him?
Oh, DJ, I was actually going to get to that a little bit later. We're going to have kind of this... I came up with this idea as we were coming up with this podcast of kind of throwing in a funny kind of category into what we would think a movie would need or want or something like that. And, of course, you'll find out later on as we go through this that I am a massive Clash fans, my favorite band of all time, and I've definitely put that influence onto the Deej. But what he's kind of bringing up is that we should have a category where we bring up, like, what would make this movie better. And I think the category should be, would this movie be better if it had a Clash song in it? And well, obviously the answer is yes. Right? But I guess the next question is, where do you put the song in the movie?
Okay, well, this is easy. So, you know the bit when you first see him and he's, like, talking... Like, he's beginning to talk about the chaos theory.
Right.
He should put him in there and it's all his leather jacket glory.
Right, you just... You could play a Clash song to introduce Dr. Ema, because he's the most punk rock character.
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on. In a tropical island... Well, you know what? We'll get to that. We'll get to that later. So we meet Jeff Goldblum. He kind of goes into his little bit of kind of talking about the chaos theory and everything else. And then we fly over to Isla Nublar, which is...
filmed on Kauai.
Kauai, Hawaii. That's right.
And my dad is actually from Oahu, so he's a homeboy.
That's right. I saw where they were filming it, and I remember watching it when I was, 16, I think, is around the time it came out. 15 or 16. Anyway, and just, you just see it, and you know it's Hawaii, and you know it's home, and that right there, like, even before everything else and seeing that, like, I was already sucked in, because I got to see home, and it's just, I know, I'm just having a moment, folks. Bear with me. So then we get the helicopter going into Isla Nublar, and we're starting to go down kind of that that long kind of I don't know, not like a hole or something like that. But the helicopter's going down the chute, basically. Yeah, for the and it helicopter. Comes down. Right. And then it like shakes, right?
And
John Hammond.
It's like, woo!
And he's like, yahoo! I just love that line so much. Like, he's really thrilled, I think, for sure.
Is he Mario
now? Oh, I don't know. But he definitely loved it. It was great. So we get down to the helipad. We get into our jeeps. And we start driving. Driving in the grass. And they're just sitting there and they're talking. And no one's paying attention except for Dr. Grant. Dr. Grant gets up out of his seat. He sees a sight that no man has ever seen, that this earth hasn't seen in millions of years, Deej.
This bit, I'm sorry. If I start crying on it, it's because of this bit.
What happens in this bit, bud?
So, you obviously see, Sam Neill's character just awestruck. And then he tells Laura Dern's character to look.
Dude, he grabs Laura Dern's head and turns in. And he's like, lady, look at this. And what do they see, Deej?
Okay, this bit still gets me to cry. So, they look and they see the Brachiosaurus walking up. The dinosaur, the music, everything in this scene is perfect.
It's perfect. Perfect. Except for, what do we have? Do we have our first cheese here, DJ?
I call Limburger.
DJ cannot stand the CGI in this movie. Now, you have to know that when we first showed him this bit, right? There was nothing that take away from the first time that you show your child this film. Because DJ, maybe not so much now, but definitely back then, was such a huge dinosaur nerd. Loved everything about dinosaurs. Could tell you, even to this day, would tell you just random facts about dinosaurs. And seeing the Brachiosaurus, my son, him seeing the Brachiosaurus on the screen, like, the tears that were coming out of his eyes, the tears coming out of my eyes, watching him see it. Y'all, it is such a fantastic feeling. And if you're lucky enough to have children and you're lucky enough to have shown them this film or plan on showing them this film and they're dinosaur dudes or dinosaur girls for that matter, this scene, that first introduction of seeing it next to the scale of man is awe-striking, dude. It's like I keep talking, folks, because my son's over here actually tearing up and kind of lost for words just because that moment was really, really important. But then we get out of the jeep, we start walking towards the Brachiosaurus. Then of course John Hammond starts talking about the T-Rex that he has,
which at this time, and still to this day, is my favorite dinosaur. Yeah. You cannot change my opinion.
T-Rex. T-Rex is DJ's favorite dinosaur. And when he said that, and then, of course, you had the attention of Laura Dern, and Sam Neill's like, wait a minute, you have a what? And Laura's like, you have a what? Oh, we have a T-Rex. And then he almost faints. Sam Neill almost faints. He cannot believe it. The T-Rex, the king of the dinosaurs, is there. And then the classic scene that comes up, the zoom in and the music turned up to 11. John Hammond says,
welcome to Jurassic Park.
And then, of course, the wide shot of all the dinosaurs in the background and over the watering hole. And they're just sitting there crawling up and they're calling out to each other. Can you believe it, ladies and gentlemen? Dinosaurs are walking with us humans at that particular time. This is crazy. This is absolutely nuts, Deej. How are you feeling, man?
I mean, at this bit, I'm just like, bro, what is going on? My brain cannot handle this.
It was just an incredible sight. Not only coming from, you know, seeing it with my child, but seeing the joy that it's bringing to my child watching this movie, y'all. It was so cool and something that if you've lived it or you get to live it in the future, there's nothing like it. I spent most of the movie just watching him watch the movie the first time, and that was well worth the price of admission for sure. Now, we're coming up to cheese number two, which is about the 24, 25 minute mark. What do we got going on here, man?
So,
we got the DNA ride is here, yeah.
Okay, well, there's actually two cheeses on this bit. Number one, not only are the effects weird, like, it's some really weird effects. The DNA strand has a really weird country voice.
That's right. It's like some broke Colonel Sanders, like, playing the DNA guy. Like, why does DNA guy have to be bad Southern accent guy? Like, why is that his part of the show? And what's interesting is I kind of thought this portion was cheesy as well. I like the science aspect of it. And I know that we've kind of had this discussion in the past where it's not necessarily true, the science, but it's kind of based in real science, right?
Actually, fun fact. So I'm going to start nerding out, and I'm sorry, people. But the probability of you finding a mosquito in amber is already pretty low.
Right.
And the fact that the blood of the dinosaurs were still preserved, extremely low.
Yeah, absolutely. I always kind of found that interesting. You know, I bought a lot of things in this movie. I'm not going to lie. Especially when I was younger. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. That's possible, you know. But, like, as you get older, like, ain't no way in heck that you're going to be able to get a needle in there and squeeze out any kind of blood that may have resembled dino DNA. I'm not buying that, especially now. I'm not buying that bit. That's just nuts, man. Moving on, we got old school VR tech at 2636 in the movie. 1993 VR. We'd like to give a little shout out here to
Billy Griggs.
Billy Griggs was kind enough to help out mom with a VR gig and actually taught her a lot about VR. And we kind of thought it was really funny seeing that part. Like, oh my gosh, look, it's like old VR tech and it's really not great. But, you know, shout out Billy Griggs. I thought that was really cool. Oh, another thing that I noticed as well for the first time, even after I watched all this thing, the voice over the loudspeaker, when you hear it.
In all his glory, Sam Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson is over the loudspeaker. He is the voice of Jurassic Park. To me, that is the funniest thing about the movie, bar none, that Samuel L. Jackson is the voice of Jurassic Park. I find that absolutely hilarious.
I mean, he's the second best character in the film.
Oh, man. So we get to meet B.D. Wong's character in the movie. And do you remember this? What was his name in the movie?
I don't remember. But I will say this. Later on in the Jurassic Park franchise, he is a very, very important character.
Yeah, like moving on into like Jurassic World and all of those too, he ends up becoming a central character in those films. That's right. But right here, he doesn't really play a huge, huge part. But I remember in this bit here, they were doing the, they were hatching the eggs here. And John Hammond got really upset because he likes being there for every egg hatching. Because I think it has a line in there where he says that he likes to be the very first person that they see so that they can grow a bond with him and kind of think of him as his mummy.
Mom, is that you, mummy?
You didn't like this part when you first saw it.
I was able to see this originally, but I thought it was so gross seeing, like, the red goo. I'm like, are there other living beings in this egg?
Yeah, I don't know. What is that red goo? It's like the egg sac or something like that? It's like breaking out. It's like, oh, this is kind of nasty.
I feel like they should have made it, like, see-through. That way it would have looked more egg-like and less, like, humanoid being-like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's actually a really great point. We also learn here at this point that all the dinos that are being created at Jurassic Park are female.
Yep. All female, not a single dude.
Yeah. All so girls. That way that they don't, they control all the procreation on the island itself, I think was the reason behind that, right?
Later, that will be testified.
Well, doesn't Malcolm have like that wonderful kind of monologue right here? Or he's like talking back and forth to Dr. Grant where they sit there and he says that, what's the line? Life finds a way. Dude, the way he talks. Oh, dude, Jeff Goldblum is super cool. Oh, the 32-minute mark. The cow going into the the Velociraptor paddock, right?
This is probably, like, the most messed up beat in this movie.
Dude, it's horrifying.
Yeah, and you don't even get to see what's going on in there.
No, it's just the sound and the rattling of the cage, or of the harness that brings down the cow and everything else. Like, I think that's actually more frightening than actually seeing the act of what's going on in the paddock itself. But this part right here, right around the 33-minute mark, we get one of the coldest entrances that has ever been done by a human being. We have the impeccable Bob Peck, who is playing, of course, the character known as...
Robert Muldoon. Sick name.
Dude, it's such a cool name, right? Robert Muldoon. And he's coming in with them high shorts, and he's like taking two steps at a time as he's going up to meet the group at the top of the stairwell. And then, of course, he does the huge player move of like putting a foot up on the railing and kind of leaning over, you know, possibly exposing stuff that shouldn't be exposed at that particular time. But man, it's super cool.
And then another horrifying bit when he starts talking about how there was 8 raptors originally. And then remember what earlier when we were talking about the alpha being delivered?
Yep.
The alpha killed all but 2 of those 8 raptors.
Can you believe that? They killed all but 2. And I think the reason why they ended up killing all but the 2 because those are the ones that would actually, like, listen to what the female raptor was doing, right? Like, isn't it that he's, like, kind of said something along those lines?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's super interesting. There's a couple of parts here and... or a couple of bits in here that DJ and I were crying with laughter about. Number one, we are in the middle of a tropical zone, okay? And frickin' Jeff Goldblum's character is dressed in all black, head to toe.
And leather.
Leather jacket, Deej. Like, come on. And then on the other side, we got the lawyer wearing a suit pant, like shorts and suit combo. Like, why? Like, who told you it was okay to wear a suit and tie jacket with some shorts? Brother, you know that's a bad look, man. That is an absolute bad look, this for sure.
This is coming out of 80s style, though.
We're kind of into the 90s now, I think, a little bit. And you can kind of see Jeff Goldblum is kind of taken off on that kind of personification of himself. But I just thought that was funny. The bit that kind of made me trip out more about the raptors than anything else was them testing portions of the fence. And they knew that there was electricity on there, but they were testing for weaknesses. But what was that phrase that Muldoon said that was super, super creepy? Do you remember it? I wrote it down.
No, I don't.
They remember. Like, they were so smart that they knew what portion of the fence they hit. Bro, that's creepy!
Like, let me just put you in the perspective of these people real quick, because I think it'll make it easier to understand. Like, just imagine you talking to this guy who knows a lot about raptors, and he's saying, my guy, they remember this.
The intelligence that he was describing was at a level of no other. Like, there was no other dinosaurs in that area that was thinking. They were thinking, which has got to be scary, considering the lethalness of the dinosaurs, man. Just incredible machines. Or not machines, but animals. Just super, super creepy. Moving along a little bit further into the movie, we have the portion where the kids are coming to visit their grandpa. And they're running. And of course they tackle poor John Hammond. Like, the guy is 117 years old. You're gonna break him, kids. Can we have a little bit of, you know, a care for the guy? Because just because he's, you know, spending no money, we still need somebody to run the park, right?
Yeah. Oh, like, hey, can we get some super glue? We need to put these guys' bones back together.
We need to put him together. I think he's broken. I think the kids broke him. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Another thing about the kids, make me the third kid now.
Please. Well, yeah, I see. I always thought that you were the second kid, or the boy. Like, I thought you were the little boy for sure. Everything about him was a lot like you, especially at that age. How would you feel? You would probably feel the same way if you saw Dr. Allen, right? Or if you, like, had read all his books and stuff. You'd kind of be fanboying too, wouldn't you?
I'd be like, yo, come here, man. I love you. Sign this book, please.
Oh, my goodness gracious. One of the funniest bits in this movie that still makes me laugh is when this said kid was kind of figuring out which car Sam Neill's character was going to be in. And he kept kind of talking to him, and Sam Neill turns around. He's like, so what car are you riding in? And then, of course, the kid's like, I'm riding in whatever car you're riding in. And Sam Neill gets out of the car that he's in with the boy and slams the door on the kid's face. And the look on the kid's face is absolutely hilarious. Like, I laugh every single time I see that, man.
He just looks like, how dare you? How dare you?
It's so funny. We get to hear Sam Jackson on the loudspeaker again. And we haven't even seen him yet, except for right now, around the 44-minute mark.
In all of cigarette-smoking glory.
Cigarette-smoking. That guy was chiefing on some butts, man. That guy was letting it go. That has not aged well.
Oh, no.
At all in this movie.
Like, kids, don't smoke.
Yeah, exactly. Don't smoke at all, because it's not going to do anything for you. But, man, my guy was letting it go on there, just chiefing it up. It was unbelievably funny. And of course, I love him. And then as we're moving on a little bit further, we're going up to the 41-minute mark. We get the greatest line in the movie, in my opinion.
Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts. Excuse me, guys. Hold on to your butts, which is super, super funny. I actually use that line still to this day. And always makes the Deej laugh, which is really, really good. From there, we are now doing the automatic ride, I think now, right? All the kids are kind of settled in their cars, and everything is automation now. They're in the vehicles, and they go up to the big gate that has the huge kind of sprawling sign that says Jurassic Park. And of course, Jeff Goldblum's character says the great line as he's entering the park.
What do they got back there, King Kong?
So good. It's so good.
Although, if King Kong was back there, I don't think that wall would still be there.
And we got some big things coming up for Mr. Kong, don't we?
Him getting owned by Godzilla in the new movie.
You need to calm down. Okay, first of all, King Kong is going to absolutely wreck shop, okay?
Okay, people, just so you know, when it gets close to King Kong versus Godzilla time, we're going to do a trailer review, and then on Instagram, we're thinking about doing a poll.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a good call, but I think we should absolutely do that. Going back to the movie, we are now going into a couple of the different areas where the dinosaurs are. We come up to the Dilophosaurus paddock, I think, first. Mm-hmm. And he's a absolute no-show at this time. And I think we come up to the T-Rex paddock, mm-hmm. I think, at this time, right?
Who is also a no-show.
Yeah, that's right. He's also a no-show. There was an interesting part in here that I remember that you wanted to talk about, that they were talking about how fast the T-Rex can run.
Okay, yeah. So, in this movie, they say that T-Rex can run to at least 30 miles per hour. And by the way, kids, this is a fun fact. And this is actually not true. It can only run 12 miles an hour, or otherwise, their, like, ankles, which is basically the thing that allows you to walk, would just completely shatter.
That's right. It was like, I think you were saying it was 12 to 15 miles was the max that they could run. And it's just the sheer weight of themselves that if they ran any faster, that they could definitely destroy their own ankles. Which is, that's funny. That's an absolutely funny bit, man. Oh my goodness gracious. We get the great exchange between Laura Dern's character and Jeff Goldblum's character, where he does the whole bit about dinosaurs are created, dinosaurs were destroyed, man was created, man creates dinosaurs, dinosaurs destroy man, and then Laura Dern's come in, and then women rule the world.
Such a bad thing, though?
No, probably not. They'd probably do a whole hell of a lot better job, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we're really messing things up, dudes.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Well, I think right here would be a good time to take a break. What do you say?
Okay, yeah.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with a little bit more Jurassic Park. And we're back! All right, welcome back, guys. So, moving a little bit forward into the movie, and of course, guys, we apologize for going a little bit long, but we do really, really love this movie. We're going to try to keep it a little bit shorter, so we're going to go a little bit faster here. So, moving on, we're about the 50-minute mark here, and we are seeing the Triceratops. That is, I think she's ill from eating some bad plants or something like that, and I love this part for a couple of different reasons. You see the sheer scale of what that dinosaur is. You see the genuine concern on Laura Dern's character's face. She's really, really worried about it. And like, you're buying it. But like, then you see Sam Neill, who completely just lies on the Triceratops' belly. Pardon me. As it's breathing in and out and in and out. And the joy and elation the man has on his face. He can't believe it. Like, he's basically hugging a Triceratops, man. What are your thoughts on this part, dude?
I mean, I always love this bit. It's so cool to see dinosaurs. But now that I've grown older, I feel really bad for the Triceratops.
Yeah, like, it's really, really sick. And we never do find out, like, if she gets, like, fixed, or she, you know, got healthy, because obviously, you know, we leave the island and we never learn anything else. I thought it was pretty ballsy of Laura Dern's character to, like, just get after it, like, trying to find out what's going on with, like, this huge animal. But not only that, how gangster was Laura Dern, like, just shoving her hand into the poop, which also leads to the line at like 52:48. That's one big pile of beep. Oh my gosh, man. I laugh so hard at that part, dude.
And when you see the amount of poop, like if I had to clean this up for dog poop, I would be in tears.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a wrap. Like, I'd quit. I would just quit my family and just run away. There's no way I'm picking up that for my chores. There's not enough money on this planet that you can give me. Oh, man, to pick that up. Oh, my goodness. So right around the 1 hour mark, we get the famous, you didn't say the magic word. And golly, Dennis is a slob. Oh, like, yeah. Just this whole area is just disgusting.
Like napkins, old Dr. Pepper cans.
We are coming to the portion of the movie now, DJ.
The portion.
That the movie is no longer a science fiction film.
It is now horror.
It is a full-on horror film. It is a full-on horror film, ladies and gentlemen. At 1 hour and 2 minutes, we hear the footsteps. We hear the shuddering, thunderous steps of the Tyrannosaurus Rex right here at this bit. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you do realize that there's only two things that are going to happen. You're going to run away, or the alternative, which is not good. It's not good. We get a couple of spots here where we get the fourth, the Deej cheese on this one, which was the night vision goggles. Those were awful. And we also get jump scare number one right here for you.
Well, actually, kind of two right here.
Okay.
The first one obviously being the lamb chop, the bloody,
yes,
bloody lamb chop.
Right, right.
And you see it smack in the car and you're just like, okay. And then you see its hand triple down and then the T-Rex just digests the rest of the goat.
Then, at 1 hour, 3 minutes, 13 seconds, we see her in all her deliciousness. Sexy Rexy has made her big screen debut. Ladies and gentlemen, Tyrannosaurus Rex is on the screen.
DJ Khaled, another one.
What were your thoughts the first time you saw the T-Rex on screen, man?
Two things. Pee in my pants. Right. And number two, oh my god, that's my favorite dinosaur. What am I gonna do?
I can understand that, like, being kind of in awe because that's your favorite dinosaur, but, like, at the same time, you have to be terrified, like, shaking in your boots. Oh, my goodness. Oh! The lawyer!
Huh. So
ditches the kids and runs to the commode, Deej! What a coward!
So, let's just say this whole bit. So, the lawyer runs to the potty because he has dysentery.
That's right. I remember you saying that bit about Oregon Trail. Like, he got a really bad case of dysentery all of a sudden and had to clean out his colon. Oh my gosh. Oh, it's terrible. Turn off the light. What is that child doing? Dylan Jeter. You know what? We're going to go off on a tangent because we did it during the movie. Just know that right here, can we tell the girl to please turn off the light? And then go into another bit that is absolutely ridiculous. Okay, you got these two grown men sitting in the car. Watch the old coward lawyer take off and leave these poor kids in the vehicle. And what are they doing? They're just sitting there. Not doing anything. No one's getting out of the car. And what does it take them, like 15, 20 minutes to realize that they should probably do something right here, DJ? Come on, man. You got to help me out here.
It's like, oh, this is entertaining. Wait. Help me, please.
Grown men. You have to do something at this point. Those poor kids are helpless. Y'all are two grown men. Y'all can help those babies out, DJ. Come on, man. Help me out here.
I'm trying to. I'm glad I wasn't in this portion of the movie.
Oh, man. It's not good. And the way that, like, he's kind of toying with the vehicle and, oh my gosh, when he comes down and he looks through the window with the one eye, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that scene is so iconic. DJ, that scene is so crazy. He's just, like, looking and she's in her with the flashlight, dude. Like, you got to do something, baby girl. Turn it off. Come on. Just don't scream. Or don't move, because they're going to see some. Oh, which is interesting, because you wanted to talk about that a little bit, DJ.
Fun fact, obviously we know that or the movie's logic, I like to call it convenience, that if you don't move, the T-Rex doesn't see you. But in real life, motion would help the T-Rex, but it could still see you. It would be like, yeah, I see you. And then number two, finally, the grown men come out and do something.
Yeah, they do something. But I think even before that, they have the, doesn't the T-Rex go over to the toilet and, like, moves the toilet away, and that poor guy is just sitting there on the toilet and nom nom.
That's me.
Nom nom. The tasty morsel for easy pickings.
That's me and Jolly Ranchers.
But dude, oh my gosh, he just sits there and then takes a completely unexpected roller coaster ride that no one recommends at the park at all.
It is a one-star review on Yelp.
It's a one-star. It's a half a star review on... No, it's only a one-star, you're right, because you have to leave some... It's a one-star review on Yelp, and we need to talk about that at a later date.
Yes, John Hammond, we're going to have some words.
So, now we're going back to the car. We have Tim in the vehicle. It's spinning around. The dinosaur is over there now. He's like basically pushing it into the mud. We're screaming at Tim to get away from the window. And then he gets stuck. He gets his foot stuck. Man, can you believe that? Oh, and then your second jump scare comes right here as well. Actually, after the dinosaur bit, we get the Dennis Nedry bit, mm-hmm. where he's driving his vehicle and we meet the Dilophosaurus at 1 hour, 13 minutes, 36 seconds. And that's where we get the second jump scare for you.
Okay, but before I cover the jump scare, fun fact. So, we know that's called Jurassic Park. Well, literally every other dinosaur in this movie besides the Dilophosaurus has came from the Cretaceous period.
That's right. Like, there's only one or was it one or two dinosaurs that came from the Jurassic Park, or Jurassic era, right?
Yeah, everything else Cretaceous.
That's hilarious. Like, I mean, can we get a better title, guys? Come on. Like, let's do your homework there, guys.
Why don't we just call it All Dinosaur Era Park?
Right, or Dinosaur Park or something like that, right? That would probably make more sense. So we get your jump scare when the Dilophosaurus, I think it's when he does his fit, like his frills or whatever it is, and he does that little scream.
And then the spit and the goo.
The spit and the goo, and then he gets inside the Jeep, which was another jump scare for you.
How did he get inside the Jeep? The other door is closed.
It's not good, man. It's not good at all.
And then another thing. Dennis Nedry, you dingus. Pay attention to the Barbasol can.
Well, it doesn't matter. He's dead. So the Barbasol can is null and void. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't gonna have no use for it anyway. Plus, it's stuck under a pile of mud. It doesn't matter. Okay. Moving on. I got some beefs. Okay? We got some beefs right here. I'm talking about the scene with the car in the tree.
Okay. Me and Dad are going to say this. This entire scene is cheese. It is Limburger.
It is the stinkiest Limburger, the stinkiest Gorgonzola that you can possibly find on the market. It's bad. Like, I'm even, like, coming from a nostalgic, like, kind of point of view, like, I'm even saying it's bad. It's bad. Like, you're going to climb up the tree. You're going to open and yank the door and move it all back and forth and everything else like that. And you're going to tell me that car is not going to move until at the very last minute. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Convenience.
But.
Music is great.
I was going to say. The only thing that saves that entire part of the movie is the score that's behind it. Like, because, like, you just knew that John Williams, and we'll talk about him in a little bit too. John Williams is sitting there in the studio like, oh, this is bad. We're going to have to make the music really, really good to make this scene work for sure. Going to John Williams, because I don't think we mentioned him in the beginning of the pod. Probably what? Top three greatest, you know, composers and score, like, score writers of all time in movie history, I would say.
I mean, for me, he's number one, hands down. Jaws, Star Wars, Jurassic Park, a ton of other things.
Indiana Jones, E.T., like, I mean, we can go on and on and on. A guy, Jurassic Park has to be, what, top three, you think, of John Williams' themes?
Top one.
Wow, you think it's his best one?
I'll tell you my top three list.
Okay, talk
top
to me.
Top one, Jurassic Park. Top okay. Two, Jaws. Top three, Imperial March. Done.
That's tough, man. That's tough. I like it, though. I'm not mad at that at all. But, yeah, John Williams gets a lot of love in the Lopez house. that's for sure. The part here, we go back to the scene where we have to, or where we see, what you call it? Malcolm.
Yep. And okay, no, I need to say this. Let me say this. Okay. My hero is now partly shirtless. Ladies, stay low.
And he has that great line in here too, where he says, remind me to thank John for a lovely weekend. Oh my gosh, I absolutely love that line. Oh, Deej, there's a couple of scenes that are coming up right here in particular that always kind of gets me. And it really, really got me when I was watching it with you, was the ice cream scene with John Hammond.
Oh, depressed John Hammond, you mean.
That scene was so well acted by the players that were in that film, in that portion of the film, which was Richard Attenborough and Lauren Dern's character. And there's that kind of, you know, you have that overshot of him eating all the ice cream because there's no electricity and, you know, the freezers are kind of down, and he's just sitting there and, you know, kind of thinking about what's going on in the park and the fact that, like, he's losing people, man. And he has that kind of wonderful exchange with Laura Dern. And there's that shot where they do kind of that slow pan right to left over the gift shop and over the dining room table. And it has that, like, single note piano playing. And it's just that soft single note. It's so touching to see this man kind of spiral in his delusion. Like, I think the part that kind of stood out to me so much right there was where he was saying that, oh, we'll fix this part and we'll fix that. And it's not a big deal because, you know, spare no expense. And, you know, Laura Dern has to basically say, no, John, people are dying. Like, this is not a good scene. This is not a good look right here, buddy. It's really, really tough, man. Really, really tough.
Yeah. This bit, perfect, and I'm going to talk about it fast. But this scene is so perfect. So you see them, Alan and the kids climb up the tree.
Talk about it, bro. Talk about it.
And then, obviously, you see all the brachiosauruses. And then I'm going to mimic Alan Grant in this bit when he calls the brachiosaurus.
It's so cool. And you see those kids kind of look up to him like, what is he doing? And then all the heads kind of pop up over the trees. And I think they catch a couple of winks. And don't they wake up to a brachiosaurus, like, eating leaves right in front of them, dude? Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I have to ask you, because, like, you know, like, that feeling of being such a huge dinosaur fan. Like, how do you feel in that moment to see a dinosaur that close to you? Knowing, what is it called, a vegisaurus, mm-hmm. right in there? Like, a vegisaurus, and you know he's going to be, you know, he's harmless. And you sit there and you touch him and to have that experience. God, it must feel so cool, man.
Dude, if that were me, I couldn't even get past the part if I touched him. If I died right then, I would die a happy man.
Yeah. Oh, man, I will say, I wouldn't want to get sneezed. Dude, the sneeze was awful. Like, it went in her mouth. Dude, you see her go, like, spit it out.
And then.
Oh, my gosh.
Important science bit, kids. So, this is still the morning, right?
So, I think they climb out of we're climbing out of the tree now, and this is where Dr. Grant discovers the nest.
Okay, so, they say earlier, or no, in this bit, actually, they say that, we all know that the dinosaur's DNA, the gaps, were infused with frog DNA. And some, Western African frogs...
Yep.
Are known to change sex or change gender in a single gender or sex environment.
Yeah, that's really cool to, like, know that you can do that in an environment. Well, in particular, in the West African frog sector, I think that's neat to kind of basically take the place of what is needed. In that environment. That's really, really cool. But it also comes into play as to why those eggs are coming up. Malcolm is right. Life does find a way, which was interesting. But now, of course, we're moving into the part, ladies and gentlemen, which is one of DJ's favorite parts.
I need a poster of this, a shirt, and I need to relive it.
Yeah, DJ hopes to use this move later on in his life, and that is the classic shirtless Jeff Goldblum scene.
Beautiful.
Doing the Deadpool pose and the whole bit, man.
Chester showing like it's beautiful. Like people. Oh my gosh. I have a Bible, but I'm not trying to offend you. But I'm saying this legitly. That is my Bible right there.
A couple of good shots that we're not going to get too into, but that whole scene where the Gallimimuses are running, mm-hmm. I thought was just shot so well. And of course the scenery, it's home. It's unbelievably perfect. It's so really good. We got a, got another cheese coming up here with the, CGI for the T-Rex and the Gallimimus. DJ does not like it.
Okay. So let me explain my reasoning why. T-Rex bursts out of the trees, grabs the Gallimimus, smacks it into the ground like it's a flapjack.
Yes.
And then eats it. And it looks horrible.
I unfortunately have to agree on that. It's really not bad.
Really not bad.
It is really bad. Excuse me.
It's really bad.
You know what? I won't disagree with you there. We get another jump scare. I think DJ's fifth jump scare here at around 1 hour 43 minutes with the raptors breaking the pipes like noodles right here.
Okay, so let me catch you up. Once again, shirtless Jeff Goldblum. Oh, beautiful. It's a work of art. So obviously you're going through her. Robert Muldoon sees that the raptors break out. Laura Dern does this crazy parkour scene.
Oh yeah, that's right.
She breaks in, and then she turns on all the things. Raptor rips the bars like they're flipping noodles. And then, and then another jump scare. Poor, poor Samuel L. Jackson. May you rest in flipping.
Yeah, his arm just all of a sudden comes out of nowhere. I call cheese on that, actually. That's a bad, like, arm. Like,
it's
they could have done better. They could have done a whole lot better. But yeah, well, moment of silence for Samuel L. Jackson. You will be missed.
R.I.P. Back to the movie.
Was it, right? 1 hour 45, we get the death of one of the most iconic characters in the film, Robert Muldoon. With the line,
clever girl.
Clever girl.
And then, I'm not going to go too deep because this bit is flipping brutal.
Oh, it's a horror scene.
Yeah.
It's straight out of a horror film.
Okay, and basically, so they plan everything. And then the second raptor jumps out and then just starts, like, let me give a good description. If you've ever seen, like people, like, beat down meat with a tenderizer, that's pretty much this man's head into the Velociraptor.
Oh my gosh, DJ, that is dark. Oh my goodness. Also, I will say that these are not real Velociraptors.
Mm-mm.
No, Velociraptors were a whole lot smaller.
Oh yeah. So, it is believed that they are Utahraptors, but they were discovered 3 years later after the movie,
right?
So, they're more based on this creature called Deinonychus.
Oh, okay.
Which is a big boy Velociraptor.
Nice. Big. And they still have the same claw on the other?
It's the same exact dinosaur.
Oh, dude, that's... Oh, my gosh. And then we're in the kitchen scene. The kitchen scene may be one of the scariest parts in any movie. Like, any kind of horror movie, any kind of, like, thriller film, the parts where you got there, you have the Velociraptors talking to each other, number one. That little... that kind of stuff. Like, bro, number one, they're talking to each other, Dylan Jeter. Like, this is nuts, bro. And cheese. Then... Oh, you're calling cheese? What is this? Cheese 9? What are we calling cheese?
CGI for the raptors.
Oh, yeah, when they jump up on the... You know, I'm going to have to say I don't agree with you on this one. I like it. I think it's super scary. I think it looks super realistic. And them kids are not bad acting right here, dude. I think they're really good in these scenes, man. They look genuinely horrified. I can't believe you're calling cheese.
Dude, I could literally remake this scene in a video game and it would look better.
Well, I will say technology has changed a lot from, what was it, 1994 to now. I mean, okay, you probably make it better on your iPhone, but whatever. I will say, ladies and gentlemen, that is pretty much the film. I mean, I guess there's a little bit more at the end there. You know, you have like...
Rexy's sexy return.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Sexy Rexy returns at the end and, you know, saves the day against the Velociraptors and stuff like that. There was a couple of parts that I loved in the end. My favorite bit was obviously T-Rex yelling at the end with the sign falling down that says...
When dinosaurs rule the earth.
It's such an epic scene, but...
Classic. Classic movie. That's a cool classic shot.
It's such a classic shot, but, you know, the part at the end where John Hammond is looking over the end... Or he's looking over the island and he's just realizing that all his work is for naught. Yeah. It's done. That part is heart-wrenching. You feel for him. Even though he put so many people's life in danger, you absolutely feel for him right there, man.
And then that's the movie. That's like pretty much the movie.
Yeah, that's the movie. DJ, I think we did it.
Okay, well, let's hope we edit this next bit, right? Because this will be teasing the very next movie.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it. It's gone on probably a little bit longer than we wanted it to. We're going to try to get better about that. I hope you like it. If you guys have any kind of comments, or if you guys just want to give us a shout out and said you liked it, or if you have any suggestions, you can hit us up again on Movies My Dad Made Me Watch podcast on Instagram. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. Deech, why don't you say goodbye to the good people?
Sayonara.
Sayonara, guys. I hope you are well. Be safe. Be well.
Don't smoke. Don't do drugs.
Don't smoke. Don't do drugs. And remember, smile at someone today, because you never know what that person might be going through. I hope everyone is well. I hope you guys have a good day. Take care, and we'll see you next week, where we're going to talk about DJ's second favorite movie of all time.
Gojira 1954.
Godzilla. Take care, y'all.